Welcome to Complaint Talker Podcast, and I'm back with Heather and Claudia. Hello. I'm
going to
put some like cheering on. Heather has recently been on Left Reckoning.
Yes.
How was that?
That was really good. Left Reckoning is a podcast from the US, and I had to go on and explain what is going on with the Labour Party to a US audience who might not have been following very much and might just have a vague idea that Labour is a bit like the Democrats. And I realised that when you try to explain what's going on, it just sounds completely ridiculous.
I think you did a good job. I think you did pretty well. It does sound ridiculous. It is ridiculous. So I think you nailed it. And you're like a big star in the US now. So you can like get us a big US audience. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Even bigger than our UK audience, which is pretty sizable.
Left Reckoning is such a big audience to start with. When I get on Majority Report, things will change.
Yeah, that's the next step. How are you, Claudia?
I'm really well, thank you. I'm excited to record this podcast.
Great, so am I. What's this podcast called? Why the Guardian doesn't suck as much as we thought it did in our other two episodes, Why the Guardian Sucks. I think that's a good title.
Why it doesn't completely suck.
It doesn't completely suck. It still sucks a lot, though.
It only slightly sucks.
No, it sucks a lot. It only slightly doesn't suck.
And so the reason we're doing this is because they did an editorial recently in which it was kind of a plot twist. For those of you who've been following The Guardian for some time, it was a dramatic plot twist where they said, by the way, Corbyn, he's not the greatest guy in the known universe, but he's pretty damn good. He should definitely be a Labour Party candidate.
So it's The Guardian View on Labour and Antisemitism, Two Cheers for Keir Starmer. And this is an editorial, and we're going to talk about that a bit later. So we don't know who wrote it, although Heather has a few ideas, right? But let's go into what they say in this editorial. So it starts off, by any yardstick, it has been a huge turnaround. Just over 2 years ago, the Equality and Human Rights Commission concluded an investigation into Labour and antisemitism that found the party was responsible for unlawful acts of harassment and discrimination. I love that phrase, unlawful acts. It sounds like a Michael Douglas film from the 80s. It was a terrible moment for a party that often lays claim to being a champion of equality. On Wednesday, the EHRC took Labour out of special measures, saying it was satisfied the party had now done what was necessary to protect current and future members from discrimination and harassment. Can I just say a little something on that? So the Labour Party are now out of special measures. They've cleaned up their act very thoroughly, as you can see, and they followed all the recommendations. They've eradicated anti-Semitism, presumably, got rid of any member in the party that would ever give any sort of sign of anti-Semitism or question the anti-Semitism narrative. And I'm still here. So just proves, you can trust complaints on a plate. This YouTube channel is endorsed by the EHRC and the Labour Party.
Well, I'm not, though.
I've been eradicated. Apart from the ones that Heather is, all of those videos. Don't watch this.
But we should say more about this. Because it says, by any yardstick, this has been a huge turnaround. Well, we might have yardsticks under which it's not been a huge turnaround. If we think about, it's not really got rid of racism, given the experiences of people, not just people of Black and Asian backgrounds, but also Jewish people. We have to say that it's not really been tackling anti-Semitism at all. Otherwise, you wouldn't see the number of Jewish members excluded that you're seeing. It's all just a charade. So, no, I don't think we can agree with, I can agree with this first paragraph.
I'm just thinking as an English lit student, just the language really annoys me. This whole thing just annoys me. But the whole by any yardstick, it's been a huge turnaround. Even just the word, by a huge yardstick, it's we're the reasonable voices here. By anyone's standards, this is correct. So if you disagree with that, you're a crank, obviously. But also the use of turnaround, which actually means in the Oxford Dictionary, an abrupt or unexpected change, especially one that results in a more favourable situation. So I would say the very first sentence is arguable. basically. I don't see how it's a more favourable situation for anyone.
It is an important moment in the history of the Labour Party. It's taken many, many months of hard work and humility to get here. It's meant rebuilding trust, not just with the Jewish community, but with all those who were rightly appalled by the culture of the party under the previous leadership.
And it's all like just sort of, it's this sort of narrative painting, isn't it? Like, you never really explain what the problem was. You don't explain how you've gotten rid of it, and you don't really say what's changed now, but that has happened. There was a problem and we have got over it. Yeah. There's no detail in any of that kind of thing. Anyway,
I'm going to now defend the first paragraph, having said I disagree with it.
Yeah, but you've been talking about Labour Party for anti-Semitism. So anyone listening, just bear that in mind before you listen to what Heather has to say on this.
Okay, so
defense of the Guardian.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the second paragraph is pretty good. And for the second paragraph to happen, they can't challenge the overarching narrative, perhaps. They're talking about a gradual step. So it's like, yeah, two cheers for Keir Starmer, not three cheers. Obviously, we have no cheers for Keir Starmer. That would be the correct response. The Guardian have been...
We've got this episode, no cheers for Keir Starmer.
Yeah, the Guardian have been doing three cheers for Keir Starmer. They're not able to go from three down to zero in one step. So going from three down to two, maybe able to go to one at some point and then join us on zero.
Should we move on to the next paragraph then? Much of the credit goes to Keir Starmer, who became Labour leader shortly after the report and who promised in his acceptance speech to tear out this poison of anti-Semitism by its roots. Classic Starmer line there. He was right to take such a strong stance, just as Jeremy Corbyn was wrong in his initial response. Mr. Corbyn has a formidable record fighting against racism and in speaking up for many persecuted peoples. But in this case, he was too slow and too defensive. To show how much better he was than some of his critics allowed, he should have tried harder to engage with their criticisms.
Well, that's pretty good, right? He has a formidable record fighting against racism, speaking up for persecuted peoples. He was just, in this case, a little bit slow and defensive. That's not the story we've been getting from The Guardian for the last 30 million articles.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
I mean, I think that, you know, the bar is very low, isn't it? I mean, this to me is so tame. It's so tame. It's like, he's not as bad as we all thought, maybe, in some ways. Like, he's still very naughty, and Keir Starmer had to sort it out. But maybe he's not completely evil. That's what makes it so funny, people's responses to this, because that is essentially the line, isn't it? Like, maybe he's not 100% evil.
I agree. It's totally weak. I think it's terrible. But it isn't just that he's not completely terrible. It's that he's a formidable record fighting against racism. That, given the context, where do you ever see that? A newspaper taking that line? This is not just one person on a newspaper. This is the official position of the newspaper, that Jeremy Corbyn is great on racism.
I feel like somebody there fought to get that in, because I feel like this article veers, personally. I feel like it veers between different perspectives. I think someone really fought to get that in.
Yes. I think that was probably Owen, wasn't it?
I think that reads to me like Owen, but I'm not sure, I think. It sounds like it.
I'm pretty sure this is written by, the good bits are written by, or the best, I'm not going to say the good bits, the best bits are written by Owen.
Yeah.
This would be the argument for shutting up the whole time so he could keep his job at The Guardian, so he could put the good bits into this, or the not completely shit bits into this editorial. That is the argument, I guess.
It's all been worth it now.
Erasing the dark marks of the recent past should not mean disavowing everything that happened between 2015 and 2020. There is a danger that Mr. Starmer's determination not to allow Mr. Corbyn to represent Labour at the next election comes to symbolise that stance. The Labour Party is unrecognisable from 2019, and it will never go back, Mr. Starmer said on Wednesday. If you don't like that, if you don't like the changes we have made, I say the door is open and you can leave. That sounds like a message to the hundreds of thousands of people who joined Labour in those years and the millions who voted for the party, that they aren't welcome.
This is what I mean. It's weird, isn't it? It's like, it's very much like, it almost seems as though, you know, perhaps it could be read. Like, why do they treat Starmer like that? They treat him with such kid gloves. They're like, maybe it seems a little bit authoritarian. Maybe it's not very democratic.
The optics are bad. Like, can you not rephrase that in another way? Like, it couldn't be more clearer. Like, the door is open and you can leave. Well, that sounds like you're saying that they should leave. Yeah, perhaps. That is what he's saying.
You shared this article, which is quite interesting, didn't you, Claudia, about how, in defence of these anonymous editorials, in that they say they have a meeting every day, and if they're doing a significant editorial, they'll see what different voices are, what different people's perspectives are. Can you imagine the meeting about this? And if you do imagine the meeting about this, the different views, maybe it makes sense why this editorial turned out the way it did, why it's got such a patchwork of different positions.
I think Owen Jones was fighting for his life in that room. I really do.
But do you think that it was more than just Owen Jones? It's very messy. So it's like there's a lot of people with a lot of sort of varying degrees of hatred or love for Corbyn, and they're all trying to get their piece in, which is, you know, not what the Guardian has sort of come to. It was very much anti-Corbyn, but much way before the anti-Semitism stuff. It had quite a sort of solid line. It did have articles from various people who were in support of Corbyn, but generally it's been dominated by a narrative that was sort of anti him running, anti him being leader, anti the large membership, all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, there was the anti-Semitism. So it's like, do you feel like there is a change? Like, people in the Guardian have changed, or the people that support Corbyn in the Guardian have really pushed to try and get this in this editorial a sort of space, a broadening of the Guardian's view?
So perhaps the commentators in the Guardian are not representative of all the journalists. Perhaps the journalists who are just doing the, here's a story about the sports this week, are maybe not on board with Jonathan Friedland and Polly Toynbee endlessly bitching about Jeremy Corbyn. That's what it made me think, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing would be, I mean, there's been a lot of talk of George Monbiot's being on Twitter and stuff, saying that he's started to question his own journalist, like his own ability to be a journalist, talking about the complexities of the anti-Semitism issue. And that's probably been a conversation in The Guardian, right? It certainly seems to be journalists who either never really had a strong opinion or didn't really weigh in on it, like Michael Crick, who have suddenly started to really question Starmer's leadership and what's happening to the left and the party. Do you think that's feeding into The Guardian's sort of editorial meetings?
I don't know, but definitely I think Labour Files was really, really important. I think Labour Files made a lot of this stuff go mainstream. It was George Monbiot and Michael Crick who watched that and then tweeted something like, "Oh, maybe I might have underestimated this. Maybe I might have got this wrong. Maybe there's something I didn't look at." And then they do seem to have gone away and done at least some kind of basic work on this. It's still not great what either of them are doing. I think Michael Crick is doing is pretty decent. I think what George Monbiot is doing is very inadequate. But it's still... has changed something. It's moved the idea that there is a witch hunt, or at least that something is a little bit suspect around the anti-Semitism and Labour narrative, from the spaces of left-wing media, and particularly the crankier end, in inverted commas, of left-wing media. It's left media that are dismissed very easily, like the Canary, and so on, into mainstream news coverage, in the sense that it's getting in columns in The Guardian. That's important. We've talked a lot of times, haven't we, about how does this ever end? How do we ever get a true narrative and a true accounting? And this has to be part of that process.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of respect for people who like do research and change their mind on something, but I can't help but feel a little bit, I still feel a little bit bitter about it. I can't lie. It's just frustrating because I feel like they're so late on it that I don't know how much they can do. Like, yeah, they can kind of set the record straight, like retrospectively, but you know, they could have done this before and maybe Starmer wouldn't have gone so far. It's just frustrating. I still feel a little bit, it is hard to swallow. I know it's a good thing in general, but when you've been smeared by these people for so long, it's just really, really frustrating.
I mean, you talk about the Labour files was a big moment. Obviously, one of the big things about that, which was a lot of people have brought up, is, you know, why did it take this foreign news agency to actually make a decent documentary on what was going on? And so, you know, these journalists, yes, they sort of were following this narrative or buying into one side of it. Why were they at the time so reluctant to listen to the other side and dismiss a lot of, because a lot of this was known. I'd heard a lot of this stuff. I hadn't seen, like, what you got in the Al Jazeera thing was the actual recorded footage of, like, the woman at Riverside constituency or whatever, you actually, rather than just reading about it. But that, all that stuff was known.
Yeah, it was all public domain. But that's the thing, isn't it? That these things get siloed. Like, it's really telling that nobody from Navarra, Owen Jones, they all just said, oh, we didn't see it. It's like, but it was because it was in the Canary, because they had dismissed the Canary. They're very, very dismissive of left-wing news sources. They're quite happy with very extreme right-wing sources. They'll engage with those. I don't think they touch things like the Canary. And, like, it's not, no one's saying you should read them regularly, but people are saying that maybe when there's something that other people aren't covering, that you could read an article on a case-by-case basis. But they weren't even doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about fear. I think it's about, like, how smear campaigns work. Like, I talk about this a lot on my channel, but I think what they've done to Corbyn and his supporters is genuinely something which is quite frightening for people like Owen Jones, etc. Because there is, like, a real consequence for it. Like, there's a genuine sort of cancellation. I mean, Heather, you've kind of felt that yourself. So I think there is self-preservation in a lot of people. So I think they kind of willfully preferred to think that the people that were being mistreated were just cranks so they could continue, really. I think there's a lot of cowardice in it, personally.
Okay, should we move on? To conflate the anti-Semitism of some on the left with all left-wing politics is illogical and short-sighted. Given the state of the country and the world, now is not the time to dismiss important ideas just because John McDonnell once smiled at them. Not only is the former Shadow Chancellor one of the most interesting economic thinkers in the Labour Party, he was also right to oppose austerity from 2010 onwards. Not a claim that can be made by all of the Shadow Cabinet.
So this is a paragraph which I think is the tell that Owen Jones wrote it. Because of the, he really likes John McDonnell. He thinks John McDonnell should have been leader of the Labour Party. He's a John McDonnell fanboy. That's fair enough, but it really comes out here. That's why I think it's Owen. Not who wrote all of it, but who wrote the not completely shitty bits of this.
Yeah, I think this is obviously, because it probably is Owen Jones, it's kind of one of the weaker parts of it in terms of it makes the whole thing incoherent, right? Because the idea is, so it starts off, we shouldn't conflate anti-Semitism of some of the left with all left-wing politics. No, we shouldn't. But that is what's happened. And that was always been the basic kind of, like, direction of the narrative, was to make that kind of link. And that's been very successful now. And, you know, it goes in from everything, the way that it was written about by journalists in The Guardian, and what Starmer actually changed at conference, where, you know, proscribing left-wing groups because of their position, not because of directly having done any anti-Semitism or made any anti-Semitic statements, but just because of their questioning of this narrative.
Oh, even, and of course, I think anti-Semitism. I mean, lots of the groups, I mean, Socialist Appeal was proscribed because they're Trotskyist. Alliance for Workers' Liberty is a really interesting one, because they totally support the anti-Semitism on the left is a problem narrative. That's really fundamental to their politics. Because they're a Trotskyist group, they got proscribed in the mix. So it's very good.
Right. The thing is, it's like this trying to disentangle, because the whole point was trying to entangle Corbyn with this kind of anti-Semitism thing that had taken hold in terms of like the narrative had taken hold in some of the public. I don't know, maybe it just seemed to be something that kind of worked, like in terms of the journalists and MPs within the Labour Party were able to come up with something that was sort of coherent and they could keep it going, right? And then, but it did take time to really get Corbyn in on it. Like, okay, it started off Corbyn wasn't doing enough, but then it sort of became, well, Corbyn basically is the reason. And so this article is trying to disentangle Corbyn from that. Because the other thing about left-wing politics in this country is, you know, there hasn't been in my lifetime, you know, I don't know if there ever will, you know, a bigger left-wing movement. Like left-wing politics in this country is Jeremy Corbyn. It has been for the last few years. So the attack on him as an individual and how that's functioned, of course, has destroyed left-wing politics or any chance of there being a large movement. So that's the problem with the narrative. You can't sort of smear Jeremy Corbyn and then say, but maybe we can have a left-wing movement without, you know, like throw under a bus, like the only person that's been involved in anything that's happened for, you know, decades. Yeah, it's just bizarre.
It plays into the kind of cult personality thing they do, doesn't it? Because it's kind of playing into the idea that, like, Corbyn was this idea himself, but he's separate from his policies. So we get rid of Corbyn and we sacrifice him, but maybe we keep his policies. And I just feel like that's really dishonest, because the reason people liked Corbyn was his policies. He is his policies. You know, you can't take one and sacrifice the other. It just makes me really annoyed.
Yeah, and it also, you just don't learn anything from it, because it would be whoever was the leader, right? I mean, that was what yeah. amazed me about it. The taking of someone like Jeremy Corbyn and turning them into what, you know, a lot of people in the country just dismiss as a racist person now.
Yeah, he's the sweetest person.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, and I think, you know, everybody who's actually really followed this and whatever they've actually said about it publicly, to like take a look at where they've, their own kind, what they've said in their lives or done in their lives compared to Jeremy Corbyn, and think, oh, do you think that couldn't happen to you if you happen to be, you know, leader of the Labour Party, that you couldn't be turned into a racist? I mean, I can't think of anyone it's more difficult to do it to, and yeah, they did, you know.
Yeah, the person who got arrested for apartheid, they turned into a racist. That is remarkable, right? But in terms of like the smearing of all progressive left-wing politics, I tried quite a lot of time to talk to Greens locally about it, saying, why aren't you speaking about this? And they'd say, oh, we just saw it as an internal Labour Party thing. And they're now being attacked by the Jewish Labour movement for accepting anybody who's been expelled from the Labour Party for any associations at all with prescribed groups, with any kind of whiff of the anti-Semitism narrative. And it seemed really, really short-sighted of them not to realise that this was going to be used to smear them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you were saying about how, you know, it's kind of mad, isn't it, that Jeremy Corbyn's been so smeared, and it is a threat to all of us, because he is so gentle, he is so careful, he's so articulate. I don't think I've ever seen him react with anger and impulse, like very rarely. And I feel like it's also a threat to people in minority groups, because also if you're more connected to an issue, obviously, you're going to be more likely to be angry, right? And be impulsive and speak things that maybe you shouldn't in the heat of the moment. So it's really dangerous that, you know, they've turned the most gentle man, who they smear as like magic grandpa because he's out there, you know, he's like hippie growing marrows and things like that. That the fact they've turned him into a dangerous radical should be worrying to all of us, because I don't have the patience of Jeremy Corbyn at all. So goodness knows what they think of someone like me, but
yeah. Anyway, let's get on with the finishing off this editorial, because the reactions to it are fascinating, right?
Mr. Starmer served in the front bench team of his predecessor. He ran for leader, promising to carry on the ideas of his predecessor. To proclaim that there is no place for Mr. Corbyn in today's Labour Party, no matter what he says or does, not only looks vindictive, it poses serious questions about the consistency of the current leader. Questions that his opponents will be all too happy to raise come the next general election. I've mentioned this earlier. I did a podcast a few weeks ago, and I was thinking, why don't the Tories mention this? I mean, it says that they will in the next general election, but, you know, Sunak's been trying to sort of take Starmer down a peg or two in Prime Minister's question times, but he's always going the opposite way, like saying, you know, oh, you were part of Corbyn. I mean, I suppose it plays into this. You were part of Corbyn's leadership. Corbyn's a bad fellow, so, you know, what do you have to say about that? But they could do it the other way, couldn't they? Because it's becoming quite damaging now for Labour, what's happening in their own party. And they could actually, the Tories could go, could join the Michael Cricks of this world and be like, you're getting rid of Holocaust survivors from your party. What's that all about?
They can use it in any way they want, really, can't they?
But it's not in their interest to use it in that way.
Why though?
Because their interest is, the Tories and the establishment generally don't want the left. They want a narrative which is about equating the left with anti-Semitism. They're going to bring an anti-boycott bill very, very soon through Parliament, which is going to push those smears even further to try and link all forms of Palestinian advocacy to anti-Semitism. They are trying to prosecute, they want to suppress protests generally, but the group that they're targeting first is Palestine Action for their kind of direct action. And once they've done that, then they'll move it on to other direct action groups. But, you know, you always go for Palestine groups first because people are scared to support them and because they're, you know, it's seen as a soft way of getting things in. So it's not in their interest to try and redeem Corbyn in any way. It's their interest to try to smear Starmer by association with him, not by distancing from him.
You don't think it would be more effective, though? I tell you what you're saying, but and I agree that they wouldn't. But you can, you know, I'm sort of playing that argument as in people that actually believe that both parties actually mean what they say and are sort of consistent in their arguments versus what they actually want to do, because it could be quite damaging. I mean, Starmer wants to distance himself from Corbyn, and so it's it kind of plays into Starmer's Starmer is damning about Corbyn all the time. Whereas if the Conservatives start championing Corbyn, that would be very difficult for Starmer.
It would be very difficult for them.
Yeah, that's true.
That's more their bottom line, isn't it?
I know, I have seen some Tories though use it. I have seen some of them use it as a proof of him being like untrustworthy in the fact that he snaked on. I've seen them say that. I've seen, you know, how can you trust him? Yeah. He literally betrayed his friend Corbyn, which isn't pro-Corbyn anyway, but I have seen them do that before.
But then that's still got the his friend Corbyn. So it's still association.
Yeah, you're right.
They can do, I think they need that.
But like, what do you think Michael Crick would say to that?
That's a bit of a better question. Why are we talking about what Michael Crick would
say? What would Michael Crick
say? Because I mean, I'm looking at it from someone that is thinking that they didn't know this narrative was happening. Now they think that it is. And they're like, well, this is interesting and it's very damaging for Starmer.
There's different things. If you're talking about Michael Crick, you're talking much more a case like Peter Oborne.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, what would he think about the talk? Right? Why would he think the Tories wouldn't do this?
Oh, okay.
It's a quite complicated question.
That's too much. I'm not feeling 100%.
You can like break.
Right, we'll come back to that.
That's an essay question.
All right, so we finish this article then. Under First Past the Post.
Sorry, I've just thought of something I wanted to say about the last paragraph. Can I just go for that? Okay. So a really important thing, which shows, again, the inconsistencies and the patchwork of this, he said, the editorial says, to proclaim there's no space for Corbyn, no matter what he says or does, looks vindictive. But that's not the Labour Party position. Starmer's position is if only he'd apologise. So what they're really doing is calling out Starmer and saying, this is not true. You're not really going to let him back if he apologises. Nothing he says will be enough. So I think there is something interesting in that paragraph. It's not really probed. It's not really put forward.
But that is a change. I mean, that is, there is a very strong line on that If you go on Twitter, then people are, however, you know, it's all Corbyn's fault. He'd be welcomed back. Everybody loves Corbyn. It's just that one thing of him not apologising that one time.
It's actually my favourite paragraph because of the use of vindictive. Like, that feels like a big change for me. Like, that is a negative, negative word.
But it looks, again, though, it's optics. It looks vindictive. Of course, Starmer would never be vindictive. But sometimes, in his bumbling way, he looks like it.
You know? I almost read this as a threat, you know. I almost read this as a sort of tongue-in-cheek. Like, it looks like, be careful, yeah. Because the next editorial might say it is.
Oh, yeah. we get down to one cheer.
Exactly. Yeah. One cheer for Starmer, and then you're done.
Okay, last paragraph. Under First Past the Post, Westminster has two main parties that serve as broad churches. Pluralism is a vital part of British democracy. As Nicola Sturgeon reminded us, from Holyrood on Wednesday. Exile dissenters, as Boris Johnson did to his team, and you deprive yourself of essential talent and useful challenge. The current cabinet shows the results, being a jumble of lightweights, wannabe talk radio hosts, and technocratic robots. Mr. Starmer is not in number 10, and his team does not face the same scrutiny. But he would be wise to look at the no-hopers opposite and take lessons. A strong leader can handle constructive criticism. A would-be government should have all the talents, and no single political team has all the answers.
No, I like it. It's kind of threatening again. I like that, but he would be wise to look. It does read like a threat to me. I think it's quite hostile.
Yeah, that's true. I do feel that it's, I mean, the idea is to walk it back slightly, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like what's going on in Israel right now. It's like, oh, you've gone too far, Starmer, but, you know, if you, like, just weren't, like, absolutely kicking out everybody in the party and maybe let Corbyn run in Islington, then everything would be fine. It's not really saying that there's any major problem. He's overstepped the line slightly, right? And they should just come back to having a few more left-wing MPs, maybe not even in the cabinet, just like allowed to stand even in as, you know, as MPs.
It is quite strong. I kind of get you're right. It's not really arguing, making a clear radical position. But when I first read it, when it says the current cabinet shows the results being a jumble of lightweights, wannabe talk show hosts and technocratic robots, I thought it was talking about the shadow cabinet, because so much has been focused on Labour that I kind of was like, I was imagining Wes Streeting, which one is he? I think he's probably a technocratic robot, but, you know, I'm not sure. And it does read like that is what your cabinet would look like. And maybe that's what your cabinet is already, because you have already done that. You know,
I mean, that is kind of implied, right? We don't know what his cabinet would be. We know, and we don't know. We have the shadow cabinet, but you don't really know their true colours until you're in government and you get scrutinised. And the implication is that at this position, it would be what we have now, the Tory cabinet. So yeah, he is kind of saying that.
Yeah, no hopers. It's quite. it's quite a fascinating editorial, but because we have looked at how bad The Guardian has been, we've all read different bits and pieces of it, we've all been very frustrated by it, and this has just comes out of nowhere, this editorial, and it's like amusing.
I mean, it feels like it's baiting him. Like, I almost feel like they're trying to use Starmer's own way of doing things against him. Because they're kind of playing him, because they're kind of delivering things that read to us, maybe we're biased, we probably are, like insults. But they're kind of covering it the way Starmer does. So it's going to make him look ridiculous if he gets really angry with The Guardian over this. I wonder if it's that sort of baiting.
Well, let's see how the Jewish Board of Deputies, let's see how the Board of Deputies of British Jews accepted this interesting editorial.
So yeah, the editorial came out on the 15th of February, and the Board of Deputies of British Jews, it's such, I always find it really hard, two ofs in the name. they released this statement, really long, I don't think we'll read it all. You claim that Mr. Corbyn has a formidable record fighting against racism and speaking up for many persecuted peoples, but in this case, he was too slow and too defensive. For a man with such a formidable record, Mr. Corbyn certainly seems to have had an unfortunate habit of finding himself in the company of people or organizations with anti-Semitic views. It is very hard to imagine that an individual with that sort of history connected to another minority group would be described by your paper in such glowing and forgiving terms?
I feel like it's kind of saying, you know, it's that idea that if it was to any other group, then, you know, it would be called out, which just doesn't make sense because the Labour Party is full of anti-Black racists and transphobes and, you know, people who are Islamophobic. Like, that just makes me feel icky.
Well, it's hashtag Jews don't count, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bit of a deal. The idea, as the editorial states, that to conflate the anti-Semitism of some on the left with all left-wing politics is illogical and short-sighted, is completely correct. Sadly, this is precisely what the editorial seems to be doing. Over the last few years, anti-Semites, along with individuals or groups that have been denied or downplayed the very real anti-Semitism in the party, have been shown the door. I you have to agree with that, right? In terms of from their position, right? And you know, as we were saying, the article is a bit kind of all over the place.
Yes, I mean, the narrative that the board deputies want is we are not kicking the left out, we're kicking anti-Semites out. If you say we're kicking the left out, you're the one who's equating being left with being anti-Semitic. We're not doing that. It's just a coincidence. It happens to be all the people on the left who happen to be kicked out for being, not usually being anti-Semitic, because then they might be able to sue, but for being anti-Semitism adjacent.
So is that like, so it's not that left-wing politics is anti-Semitic, but everybody who's left-wing is anti-Semitic?
Well, not everybody. I think the board deputies, I think, want Hadley Freeman, Luciana Berger, Margaret Hodge to be left-wing.
Do they?
Yeah.
But then...
in the way we are. Be included within the left. So they're saying, no, there's this very broad left with people, lovely people like Luciana in it, and Margaret and Hadley and I don't know, David Baddiel maybe, I'm not even sure. And we don't really want to be like, it was ridiculous to say that. It's obvious that what we're doing is kicking anti-Semites out. And there are anti-Semites on the left. But then that's the bad bit of the left. That's the bit that should be kicked out to make space for the good lefties like Luciana to come back.
Yeah, okay. But then obviously the Guardian is saying that those sorts of people, or at least implying that those sorts of people are on the soft left. There's a distinguish. It's not that they're all sort of in a left-wing sort of washing machine jumble all over the place. Some happen to be anti-Semitic and some are really nice people. So it's people that are what would be considered the far left that take particular positions on things. They're all the ones that are being chucked out. They're all the ones that are anti-Semites.
The Guardian uses the left a really interesting way. It doesn't say far left in that.
No.
It says left.
Yeah.
That is an interesting choice because we are the left, but we're not usually that's the left.
I noticed that.
Credit to The Guardian for that as well.
Yeah.
This is a piece which I like more from doing this podcast. I hate it.
It's like,
but you know, I'm going to appreciate it, right?
Yeah.
So what, we've gone from two cheers for The Guardian to three cheers for The Guardian?
No, we've gone from zero cheers for The Guardian to one and a half cheers.
One and a half
That's
cheers.
Quite a lot though, one and a half.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Far left activists, including regular contributors to your letters page, have worked overtime to present this as an attack on socialism or left-wing politics in general. This does a serious disservice to the many people with left-wing politics who are doubtless horrified by the excuses made by some amongst their number for egregious anti-Jewish racism. It is obvious, except to the actively disingenuous, that this is what Keir Starmer means when he talks about the party being in a very different place from 2019.
So this might be the podcast that finally gets you chat at Labour Party, Daniel. It's long.
No, we're not under special measures anymore. You're questioning the EHRC. You're saying they left the job unfinished, which they definitely didn't. I am clearly supposed to be in the Labour Party, and my views are endorsed by both Starmer and the EHRC.
How have you survived?
It's because they don't just attack anyone, they attack people who...
I'm so inconsequential, that's why.
Yeah, you have to become consequential in the moment. And yeah, you need to aim for that. If you apply to be a counsellor, then you'll get chucked out overnight.
That would be an interesting test, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I could even sort of change my narrative for a few months and like say, I've really started to learn. I've been reading the Board of Deputies notes about stuff. And maybe I'm wrong about all this anti-Semitism. Also, I'm applying to be a counsellor. And then I'll immediately just get investigated, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about the EHRC, just in general, right? Like a lot of the stuff you get on Twitter now, you know, obviously the argument now like is just totally based on the EHRC, the argument that the Labour was anti-Semitic, you know, broke the law, whatever, had to be investigated by the EHRC. It was so racist. But like a lot of those people are the same people who bang on about how racist the Tory party are and how they've got, you know, individual Tory cabinet members are racist and say racist things. The policies, like the legislation, is actually racist towards people. They'll say all that on Twitter. But the EHRC have never investigated the Tory party.
So the EHRC did an investigation of the hostile environment policy. And there's kind of an interesting contrast. There's someone called, I think Liz Fiketa is her name, who did a comparison between how much more serious they were in investigating a problem with complaints in the Labour Party than something which actually killed people. The hostile environment, and didn't they investigated the Home Office, I think, rather than the Tory party. But in a sense, you could see those as a little bit comparable. And yeah, like I say, one was obviously had much greater material effects on people than the other.
Is the Home Office still under special measures?
Exactly, they just didn't do the same kind of crap. I can't remember the DLs, but I covered it in my I think it was which video do they put in? Oh, it's in the David Baddiel video at the end.
But do you not think that's an interesting point that just kind of shows that it's just all kind of ridiculous with the EHRC?
Because all these organisations are like that.
Yeah.
Index on censorship. And who's in charge of Index on censorship? Fucking Ruth Smith, right? Who clearly was shutting down free speech in the Labour Party, is in charge of a free speech organisation. All these organisations exist to suck the energy out of what should be radical areas of politics, like equalities, like human rights, like free speech, everything else. But yeah, none of this makes sense. No one's talking about this in a way that makes sense, except the Board of Deputies.
Yeah. The Board of Deputies of British Jews.
Yeah, like me. And you, right?
Yeah. Mr. Corbyn's response was to claim, after some throat clearing, what's that all about? Do you see that bit?
It was odd.
Well, because he did say, I accept the EHRC report findings, didn't he, or something. But, you know, also. So I guess I have to, like, not say the bit that...
Oh, I see. Right, that's what that means.
That's throat clearing.
Right, okay. Yeah. I see. Mr. Corbyn said, after some throat clearing, that anti-Semitism in Labour was dramatically overstated for political reasons by our opponents inside and outside the party, as well as by much of the media. As the headline in your paper stated at the time, Jeremy Corbyn rejects overall findings of the EHRC report on anti-Semitism in Labour. The complete inability to learn from his mistakes led to the whip being withdrawn. Nothing Mr. Corbyn has said or done since indicates that his mind has changed on this in any way. So there you have it.
I feel like I'm going a bit crazy. Like, I don't know if I'm even referring to the right thing, but didn't the report actually state that there has been factional use of the problem by different people? Or am I wrong?
I think the report said that you could make criticisms in that regard. That in itself is not problematic.
Yeah,
to criticise the scale
that.
A bit.
Ford talks about factional use of anti-Semitism. EHRC like you say, says it's okay to talk about the extent of anti-Semitism. That should be protected speech.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, and I've never got my head around where this comes from. Jeremy Corbyn rejected overall findings. He accepted the findings. I mean, not that it makes any difference. He was the leader. It's like I accept. Well, I mean, what is he even accepting at the point? I mean, it's such a weird way of putting it. But he did say that.
So Marie would say, if you say you accept the findings, then you say it was exaggerated by your political enemies, you're not accepting the findings.
So no, but he's saying that anti-Semitism was exaggerated, not the findings.
No,
which were actually not much.
But she would say the findings are that this is real. So if you say it was exaggerated, that would be
that's the last line of the report. This is real, guys. Yes. In conclusion.
That's basically the whole report is real, guys.
Anyway, your editorial talks about pluralism in British politics. The organization I represent is not politically partisan.
Yeah, whatever.
The board feels strongly that British Jews deserve the right to vote for any party they feel, with any leader, in any situation. Vote for any party they feel best shares their values. In 2017 and 2019, for many Jews, that could not be the primary factor in their voting choice. At the next election, I believe all British Jews will once again be free to vote according to their political persuasion. Why couldn't they vote for their political persuasion in 2019?
They were really left-wing, but they didn't Labour align with their political persuasion because of the anti-Semitism. Now the anti-Semitism is gone, they can go back to being voting for a left-wing party to align with their views. That's how I feel. You know, I was really left-wing. Now I couldn't vote Labour, obviously. Now I can. I'm so lucky. Like,
yeah. You can't. No, we don't want you. We've told you where the door is.
But technically, they're kind of saying I'm not a British Jew because all British Jews are free to vote according to their political persuasion. Therefore, logically, I can't be a British Jew.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. Like, it must be incredibly frustrating to keep being spoken over and smeared at the same time.
Yes.
So that was the Board of Deputies' take on it. And should we have a look at the Guardian letter page following this editorial? I don't think we should go through them all. Which one do you want to do?
Simon's is the funniest.
Okay. So let's have a look at Simon's.
Simon C. Bagmentefiore, the famous historian of Stalin.
Like many other people, particularly my fellow Jews, I was surprised, dismayed, and disappointed by your editorial. It's extraordinary that The Guardian should devote a formal editorial to defending Jeremy Corbyn only 3 years after his toxic crankery led to the unprecedented shame of an Equalities and Human Rights Commission investigation into racism in the Labour Party and a Tory landslide. That investigation, as well as Corbyn's apparent affection for murderous dictatorships in Russia, Syria, and Iran, repelled many Labour voters, but also alarmed most British Jews. I always like they just can't help themselves but pile on other stuff, which I always feel like kind of detracts from the main thing. If you really believe that he is an anti-Semite and hates Jewish people, that's a pretty good reason to not vote for him. You don't need to like list other things that he's done.
It's true, but it is important that Keir Starmer always links it with NATO and being pro-business.
Yeah, like, oh yes, but it's like, you know, I've got like you can just say, you know, the Holocaust was pretty bad. Like, you don't have to go, but you know, also the uniforms the Nazis wore, they were like weird trousers and stuff, you know. It's like you just like there's enough there.
Yeah, there is, but I always feel that opposition to NATO is basically anti-Semitic, and opposition to business is basically anti-Semitic. So, you know, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, nothing's actually gonna change, so it can swing back to you, basically.
It also is like trying to convince people, the wider public that might read this, about Corbyn's crankery, which is a great word.
Toxic crankery.
No, not like the good crankery.
Toxic crankery.
Supportive, you know, allied crankery. This is the toxic version.
This letter, it says, It says toxic crankery. And they think, oh yeah, this is the one we should publish. And the guy is like a proper historian. Can you imagine if in his book about Stalin, the young Stalin, this was before Stalin started his toxic crankery.
To celebrate his formidable record fighting against racism and speaking up for many persecuted peoples, masks both the extreme selectivity of these stands and Corbyn's strange affinity for repressive, bigoted regimes and organizations. It also shows contempt for the EHRC. Not the EHRC. Don't show contempt for them. Which found the party responsible for unlawful acts of harassment and discrimination. Not a great Michael Douglas film that you should check out. Not to speak of Labour MPs like Luciana Berger and many Jewish members who found the environment so hostile. That's quite good. I like that. Hostile environment. The environment so hostile. It's like the French. Environnement de hostile. That they left the party.
So what really annoys me is, like, in my branch, like, we used to have, like, loads of Jewish people. Like, it's just a little branch, but there was, like, I don't know, about 8 of the people who came regularly to meetings are Jewish. I think only one of them is still a member. I don't even know whether he is or not. I haven't talked to him for a few months. He was definitely disengaging. He doesn't go to meetings anymore. And, like, how is that not talked about? How is that the absence of left and the people? This is not mostly people being expelled. I was expelled, but everyone else was just like, didn't feel comfortable anymore.
To suggest his sole fault was that he was too slow and defensive would be laughable if it was not so deliberately dishonest. Worst of all, the editorial implies that anti-Semitism is something other than racism. In doing so, it makes light of centuries of anti-Jewish racism. It is almost as if your editorial was carefully crafted to hurt Jewish people. If this genuinely reflects the policy of The Guardian and the Scott Trust, this is a heartbreaking moment in the history of a newspaper that was once the champion of equal rights and liberal values.
This is why you've got to like that editorial in the end, if you're on the left, because it's so pissed off people like this, right? You can't not at least like it a little bit, but it's a heartbreaking moment for him.
Yeah, but it isn't really. I mean, it's not giving an inch, isn't it? That's the thing about all of this. I mean, the Guardian article, as we said, it's a bit all over the place. And yeah, it does praise Corbyn in certain parts, but it's very careful in how it does that. But this is, you know, this is saying that it's totally outrageous in any way to see any positive light come out of 2015, 2019, or anybody that was involved, or anybody who even voted for Labour at that time.
So should you wish to, there are many other letters you could read. We're not going to go through all of them though, are we?
No, are there any choice quotes that anybody wants to get highlighted?
So Mike Katz, Corbyn is the author of his own demise and negates any, yeah, he's the author of his own demise. He brought it on himself. Yeah,
Mike Katz also ends his letter with, or is it simply that Jews really don't count? So David Baddiel's had quite an influence. I mean, he also talks about, you know, let alone the Jewish MPs hounded out of the party under his watch. I mean, turn that around. I mean, Heather, I'd say you've been hounded out of the party. I mean, Keir Starmer is hounding so many Jewish people out of the party right now.
Yeah, they left. They you know, lots of MPs left.
I mean, now being welcome back, it really didn't affect their career. If anything, it's boosted it. Luciana will get a very nice new seat where the people locally get on with her better than they did in Liverpool.
Who are being booted out are people that ran to be MPs but were unsuccessful and were trying to run again in the next election and not getting on the shortlists. And these are people that did very well and almost won seats and are the most popular people within the local Labour parties. They are actually being hounded out. They're just, well, not even hounded out. They're just immediately out. They're not allowed to come back in.
It just annoys me that there's not a word for, like, I was looking up, you know, what's happened to Afzana Begum and how she's actually been hounded out. You know, that whole trigger process as part of her domestic abuse experience. And there's not a word. That's actually a woman who actually has been hounded out in the worst possible way.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't seem to count.
Absana, Jeremy Corbyn's been handed out. Sam Tarry was handed out of his parliamentary position. Yeah.
Nice way to end it, I think. That low. Totally defeated.
There's a lot of energy there, isn't there? Yeah, let's end it there.
So, if you like that podcast, why don't you listen to some of the other ones? We've got two other episodes of Why the Guardian Sucks. You can listen to those or watch them, because this is a video and a podcast. It's both a YouTube channel and a podcast, and at the same time, it's neither. It fails at both.
That was like quite a group editorial decision, wasn't it? There was quite a lot of discussion about whether it should be video or...
Yeah, that was quite tense, wasn't it?
That's an editorial decision.
Well, I said...
Who was Aaron Jones in that? Fighting the good fight. Selling out was fighting the good fight.
Well, the first comment under the video last time was, oh, it's such a treat to have a video as well, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, that person, can you block people on YouTube? I don't want them commenting anymore.
See, I learned a lot from Starmer, because did you notice I just sat on the fence and just didn't really give any sort of answer?
Working your way, yes, soon it'll be.
I said we could do this one as voices only, so if you want to, you can.
No, let's put it out as a video.
Oh, right, you changed
Look at that. Look, that's nice compromise, isn't it? Everybody wants to do what the other person
The unity
do.
Candidate.
Yeah. No, I prefer it as a video as well, just because I think it helps people.
Yeah, well,
it's not so good.
I wanted to put out videos, just not for all of them. But since we haven't done one for so long anyway, I mean, yeah, we should put out as a video.
Yeah. So, should we wave then?
Yeah.
Just doing a video.
That's the best thing about the video. Come on, Heather, come on. It's been a long time. We should do a longer wave. Yeah, great.
Longer wave.